Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And here we go.
And once again, now in the month of June, that's rock cracking, political rock still cracking across the country. You've come to the right place because you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right here on WebTalkRadio.net. That's WebTalkRadio.net. We're glad to have you. Our listening audience is growing each week because you are telling your friends and neighbors, we welcome new people. This is the craziest presidential election in my lifetime. Imagine in your lifetime. I've talked to people in their 80s and their 90s, and they say they've never seen an election like we're seeing right here. This is history in the making. You're a part of it. I'm a part of it. And together, we're going to get through this election, but there's a lot of things going to be happening. So every week, tune in to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Now, in this week's show, last week, I did go to Washington, D.C. I was there during Memorial Day and the festivities, rolling thunder, all kind of things going in throughout the city, including Donald Trump speaking at Rolling Thunder. There was, I saw some presentations at the different memorials, the Korean War Memorial and others, and I'll give you a brief synopsis of what I saw and what it means to this election. Also, coming up, this on the second half of the show, I told you last week, there's a lady that her father attempted to assassinate Mussolini, and we're going to have her on. Her name is Florence Calderon Blake, and she does have a book out talking about her life experiences, but we are going to speak to her. She has a lot to say, and even what it means in way of terrorism today. What do we expect? What's fascism that Mussolini had? We're going to be talking to her about that on the second half of the show, so don't miss it. And what else we're going to have? Remember last fall, our listeners, what did I call Obama's legacy? President Obama so wants his legacy to be just enshrined in stone somewhere for the ages, but his legacy, what I call it, is nothing more than the legacy of lawlessness. And once again, I'm going to show you where this administration has become lawless, and it's, you can define it by communism, socialism. There's no other way. Wait till you hear about, you remember, if back during the Great Recession, what started that, our government messing around with home laws, banks, and but Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You remember those terms? Well, they were on Wall Street. You could invest in them, and they basically went bust. But the government bailed out. I got a story to tell you that you won't believe. So listen in. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes. But first, let me get to what's going on. There's this talk about a third party candidate, Bill Kristol, National Review. He thinks of himself as an elite in the conservative intellectual circles, but it's almost like he's circling the wagons around himself. But he may get four or five others to join him. We're finding out there is a fine American named David French who may become his third party candidate, Bill Kristol's third party candidate. Could he get more than two or three votes? Well, we're going to wait and see. But I just have to tell you, it's like Donald Trump said a long time ago. People said, well, if you don't win the Republican nomination, will you go third party? And he wouldn't ever rule it out like any good someone wanting to leverage their position. He's not worried about it now. Will somebody else run third party? It is a daunting task. And we're not going to go in it on today's show, but let me just suffice it to say, if a third party candidate comes up, springs up, then by all means, all three or four of Bill Kristol's fans, go ahead, get behind him. You may realize your audience is much smaller than you think in your mind. That's my message to Bill Kristol. What do we got to talk about? Well, one thing on the Democratic side, this week, California, Hillary Clinton still can't shake the burn. Is she feeling the burn? Well, no matter what Bernie Sanders does in California, and he may win it, but it's going to make her look weaker and weaker. It's making the Clinton backers getting redder and redder as they get madder and madder. And Bernie do? What will Bernie Sanders do at the Democratic National Convention? Well, some people think he will be pushing his way to get on the ticket. Would Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton get together and sing a song like this?
You and me, no matter how they toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me, so happy together.
Well, if Bernie Sanders is offered the vice presidency on a Democratic ticket, will his followers fall in love with Hillary Clinton? Will Bernie fall in love with Hillary Clinton? I don't know. I really don't know. But there's a lot of people who don't like Hillary Clinton, and the feeling is growing. And it's not just those who feel, you know, Hillary's feeling the burn, and some people getting excited about Hillary. But what happens when more people are excited about Bernie Sanders than Hillary? She's got her hardcore fans, those that are stuck with her all along. But more and more Americans are looking at this email scandal. This email, is this the way she, you know, is this the way she feels about our national classified secrets, that she would just put them on any server and then lie about it? And once again, those terms that Donald Trump says, crooked Hillary, well, I think it's sticking. It's sticking like mud. It's sticking like mud, and it's getting uglier out there. Talking about Donald Trump, yes, I did see where they're setting up. I'm sorry, I did not hear the rally he had with the Rolling Thunder veterans coming into Washington, D.C. for Memorial Day weekend. I saw them setting up there at the Lincoln Memorial, and I was there with my family. We had some things to do and places to go, so we actually didn't see and hear Donald Trump. But I do want to say there were people protesting there. I didn't see that many, but they had to sign something like, we support our troops, but we can't support Trump. But I can tell you, Rolling Thunder was behind Donald Trump. And for those who don't know, it's those that come in, veterans, Rolling Thunder, or many veterans coming in, people supporting the veterans. They do it every year. And the motorcycles from around the country. So it was a big event. Now, my family and I, we got in on the end of one of the Korean War services, commemorating the troops of the Korean War. And it's sad that there's very few World War II veterans that are able to travel now and make it to some of the activities and ceremonies. There was the parade, Memorial Day parade, going down through Washington streets. I want to say patriotic, and I wanted my family there. And so we spent some time talking about what it means for those who gave all to their country and how important it is to remember them. And of course, there's no better place than to see at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier the precision marching and guarding of the tomb, even through all inclement weather. So I do want to say, as we mentioned last week's show, this Rock Splitting Politics show were very out of my heart and soul from those who fought in a Revolutionary War all the way even to today in protecting our troops, protecting in the Middle East and Afghanistan and those in Iraq, those fighting against ISIS. Throughout it all, we support our troops. We pray for the families who are in the field today, and we respect and honor those who have fallen and given their all. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart and all who put together Rock Splitting Politics. Now, let me talk some about Donald Trump. He attacked the press last week. Let's see what he had to say. Then I'll give you some comments and just take a listen right here.
I think you've set a new bar today for being contentious with the press corps, kind of calling us losers to our faces and all that.
No, not all of you, just many of you.
All right, fine. Enough of us. Is this what
not you, David?
Is this what it's going to be like covering you if you're president?
Yeah, it is.
Let me tell you. We're going to have this kind of confrontation in the press room.
Okay, yeah, it is going to be like this, David. If the press writes false stories, like they did with this, because, you know, half of you are amazed that I raised all of this money. If the press writes false stories, like they did where I wanted to keep a low profile, I didn't want the credit for raising all this money for the vets. I wasn't looking for the credit. And by the way, more money is coming in. I wasn't looking for the credit.
Let me break in right here. Now, this, of course, Donald Trump talking about at a press conference that he called, talking about the press, how dishonest they were in saying, where's the money?
But I had no choice but to do this because the press was saying I didn't raise any money for them. Not only did I raise it, much of it was given a long time ago. And there is a vetting process, and I think you understand that. But when I raise almost $6 million, and probably in the end we'll raise more than six because more is going to come in and is coming in. But when I raise $5.6 million as of today, more is coming in. And this is going to phenomenal groups, and I have many of these people vetting the people that are getting the money and working hard. And then we have to read probably libelous stories, or certainly close, in the newspapers. And the people know the stories are false. I'm going to continue to attack the press. Look, I find the press to be extremely dishonest. I find the political press to be unbelievably dishonest. I will say that. Okay, thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, could Donald Trump get any more blunt about how he feels about the press? And can you remember anywhere in our lifetimes that a presumptive nominee for the United States presidency of either major party went and attacked the press like Donald Trump did? I mean, as much as you can say bad things about Donald Trump, you have to admit he has got some guts to go against the press the way he does. Nobody else on the face of this earth can rip into the press like Donald Trump. And he did it. You just heard him. That happened last week. And I did say that there's a clip where he calls the press a sleaze. He points out a reporter, Tom Lamas from ABC, and calls him a sleaze. Take a listen to this. And then a veteran comes up and tells why they support Donald Trump. Take a listen to this. And then we will follow up some comments about Washington, D.C. and what I saw there during Rolling Thunder during the Memorial Day weekend. So, but take a listen to this first from Donald J. Trump.
Well, the veterans believe me. Let me tell you the veterans why they believe. And I have one group was here that I gave. Is Al Baldessaro here? Maybe you want to say, this is a group I gave money to. Now, I could have asked all these groups. He just showed up. I just saw him. But I could have asked all these groups to come here, and they could have made, I didn't want to do that. I'm not looking for credit. But what I don't want is when I raise millions of dollars, have people say, like this sleazy guy right over here from ABC. He's a sleaze, my book. You're a sleaze because you know the facts, and you know the facts well. Go ahead. You might say something.
Thank you, Mr. Trump. First of all, for the record, I'm a state representative from New Hampshire, 10 year on the Veterans Affairs Committee, 22 years in the Marine Corps, retired first sergeant. What I want to clarify here, first of all, I would never, ever in a million years put my name on a candidate that did not, from his heart, look me in the eye and tell me he's concerned about veterans. That's Donald Trump. I met him over a year ago. I've been involved with many fundraisers. There are many scam artists out there. He did the right thing by vetting these groups there. If you look at some of the groups, they're giving 20 cents, 40 cents on a dollar, and they're spending the rest for, you know, their, you know, nice, lavish trips. He gave 100%. The liberal media is the only ones that have been calling me on the foundation. All right, I'm the former chairman. I've been dealing with this stuff for years as a veterans activist. Stop using veterans as liberal, as political pawns. You got a guy outside McCoy. Go do a Google search on his Facebook. He's out there. His pictures with Clinton. They are using veterans as political pawns. It must stop. Donald Trump is doing this for the heart. You're all focused on the way he's raising money, and you're not looking at the 22 veterans that are killing each other every day. You're not concerned about the thousands of veterans that are on wait lists. Look at his plan on his Trump's website. He talks about medical cards. He talks about fixing the VA. He talks about competition. I think the liberal media, and I've been dealing with you a long time, you need to get your head out of your butt, focus on the real issues. Thank you.
Well, I believe that gentleman summed up Donald Trump's press conference, and he came clean on getting money, to millions of dollars to veterans organizations. Now, in just a minute, we're going to talk about the lawlessness, another way the lawlessness of this Obama administration continues its legacy. Something you hadn't heard in the papers, it's hard to believe it's true, but it is. I'm going to share it with you in just a minute about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But first, let me remind you, you're listening to us right here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. And there is a book that helps keep this show on the air. It's called Bedrock Truths. You can get your copy by going to the front page and ordering it. Click on the book cover. It'll take you to my page where you can order it, or you can go through Amazon and order Bedrock Truths, 8 Uncompromising Principles for America Now. It's not just me. It's also Dr. Alveda King, Dr. Alex McFarland. He'll put this book together. We hope you'll order it and get one for your friends. Liberals, conservatives, every American needs to read this book and understand the principles that we need to fight for right here in our political life. Now, let me get to a story in just a minute. We'll get to the conversation I had, and I told you about, with Florence Blake and her father, who went to assassinate Mussolini. So that's coming up in just a minute. You don't want to miss that. But first, you remember one of the things that sort of kicked off the Great Recession, the mortgage crisis, and through it all, it looked like, of course, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, these were government-started, assisted entities, a special relationship where they got investors, but government sort of controlled everything. And some people said it wasn't a good idea. Some people said it did. It helped get houses. But anyway, we know they helped push getting bad loans. I mean, people who couldn't repay their mortgages, and they kept signing them up. And it caused the great crash and great depression, the great recession in 2008. But what happened is, there's shareholder rules. There's rules to have stock listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and these shares we were lied to. The Paulson, who was the Treasury Secretary, said, you know, they were in good shape. They weren't in good shape. They were lied to. The investors were, and now after what happened, and you can get all the financial details, but the government came in and bought 79.9%. They got preferred shares and warrants, and they owned 79.9%. There's reasons why they couldn't go to 80%. They left that 20% basically for the investors. And so they wasn't fully on it, because basically, well, people would say no politician would like to take on $5 trillion in debts and guarantees. So that's during the great bailout, that's what happened. The bailout cost $189 billion, and you know, so over a few years, it's a huge bailout the government had to do. They said they had to do, they did it. But so guess what happened? As everything, they got the bad loans squeezed out, and things rebounded, and finally the government found out that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were going to start making money, not just a little, but in the billions. So what they did was they went there and they had a new rule written in that basically the government would get all the profits, and they would and they'd pull the rug out from under the shareholders. Those 20% and on it, they'd make sure that only the government that owned the big, basically the big wig that owned it all, would take the little 20% away. They wouldn't make any money. All the profit would go to the government, and they'd just rip the rug out from under the 20% shareholders. Well, that's exactly what the legacy of lawlessness of Obama, his administration, can go. You can see how he hates capitalism. He hates companies that are there to help people get houses. He hated the fact that somebody would make money off of that, and not just the government. So they wrote rules to rip off the shareholders. And now he's gone to court. There's lawsuits, and we don't know what's going to happen. But I can tell you that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, the shareholders of 20% that own 20% of these shareholders have been ripped off by the United States government, by what the actions of the Obama administration and Treasury officials. You can look it up. You can go and just look up Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and see the history, and look at lawsuits by shareholders, and you can understand it better. But this is an example of what this administration has done. Its legacy of lawlessness will continue. And one day, hopefully, we get a Republican administration in there, and we can even bring to justice those who have undermined Americans. And this is another example of how private citizens have been ripped off by those in the government of this administration. Now, I told you we're going to get to our guest. Her name is Florence Calderon Blake. Let's hear her story.
Mussolini knew that he had enemies in Sicily, so Mussolini did not show up.
Okay.
My father was ready for him. He was on a mountainside with a loaded rifle. He was ready to shoot that speaker's platform, and Mussolini sent a substitute in his place. The fascists had an enemy in Sicily called the Black Hand Society in those days, which is the mafia. And my father had the choice of joining the fascists or joining their enemies, who were the mafia. My father didn't want to do either one. He decided to leave Sicily and take his family away from that, and that's why he came to the United States.
Florence, you said your dad fought during World War One. He was a soldier during World War One. And
right.
So after the war, then when did Mussolini come into power?
Apparently, it was 1923.
He was a fascist, and so that put your dad at odds, because he liked free enterprise. So that put him at odds, and basically divided into either you're part of the mafia or you're part of the fascist. Is that what was happening in Italy at that time?
Well, for the people that owned wealth, yes. My grandfather owned virtually all of the real estate and all of the industry in the city of Castelterminy, Sicily. So everybody there, all their population of 9,000 people, owed my grandfather either their livelihood or their housing or both. And even if they owned a small business, like a barber owned a barbershop, he paid rent on that barbershop to my grandfather. So if you were in a family like that, you wanted business and industry to progress. You did not want fascism to take it away. And if the mafia were the enemies of these fascists, you wanted to be part of whatever underground movement was trying to get rid of the fascists. When my father decided to leave Sicily, at this point, the fascists had gotten such a foothold and gained enough power that they would not allow him to take anything but the clothes on his back. My father, mother, and oldest brother left Sicily with zero, and they came to the United States with nothing. They had no money or industry or ability to earn a living because they couldn't even speak the language.
Yeah. Now, when they left Italy, he would have inherited that from his father. I mean, what happened? Did the fascists go ahead and take over all the private enterprise that was in Italy at that time?
As I understand it, they didn't make quite the strides in Sicily that they had made in the northern part of Italy. Hmm. Because Mussolini had a lot of respect from the northern Italy people because he made roads, he made the railroads run on time, all that kind of jazz.
Uh-huh.
He was extremely anti-Semitic. He would just as soon have killed all the Jews, which is why he was Hitler's idol. Hitler learned a lot from Mussolini.
Really? Now, I haven't really heard that angle in as far as the Holocaust and being anti-Semitic. I didn't know Mussolini was so anti-Semitic, but you think that Hitler actually learned some of his hatred for the Jews from Mussolini, or respected Mussolini for that aspect?
Yeah, he followed him. And Mussolini wanted to colonize. He taught the kids in schools songs like Facetaneta, which means blackface, for Abyssinia. In other words, they would be going to fight a war in northern Africa to colonize northern Africa. And these were songs that my oldest brother learned in school because they dressed him in fascist uniforms and they made him sing these songs, and they taught him how wonderful Mussolini is. They taught him songs like Giovinezza, which means youth, and it was all about how fascism was la bellezza, the beauty of Italy, and all this kind of jazz. My father couldn't simply leave Sicily and come here and become a citizen. He had to study for 7 years in the United States for his citizenship, so he left his wife and son behind in Italy while he worked a real menial jobs here. I mean, total abject poverty, but uh-huh. He worked. He didn't go on welfare and collect from the taxpayers. He got jobs, even if it was collecting garbage on the side of the streets, which was not a respectable way to earn a living. But he did it. He worked in the textile industry also.
So he did all this, you know, he said, what, for 5 years or more before he could come back and get his wife and your brother?
Yes, and while he was in the United States studying for his citizenship and putting in the 7 year, my mother gave birth to another child. But that's... That's all explained in my memoir. I believe in my heart that that child was born out of wedlock and that my mother murdered him. Mm. That second child died. It was a mysterious birth. It was a mysterious death. And yeah, I think she killed him. My parents were murderers. No question about it.
I saw that in talking about your book, your memoirs. So now why do you think your parents were murderers? I mean, do you think they were before they ever left Italy, before the fascists came in and drove your dad out, or is it something that happened after they came to the United States?
The Sicilian mindset, kind of typical of Mediterranean thinking, I think, was death before dishonor. One did not do anything that might dishonor the family name. Now, my father had a younger sister who became pregnant out of wedlock by a married man. She could not marry him because he was already married. They didn't have divorce in Italy. So the only honorable thing, as far as my father was concerned, was to kill her. And he shot her to death. He admitted this to me. I know that this is so because he told me. And he didn't say it with any kind of trepidations or seeming regret. He said it with pride. Florence, you can hold your head up high and walk down the street with honor because I avenged the family name by getting rid of this scourge, this family member who disgraced us by getting pregnant out of wedlock, and he killed her and her unborn child.
And that was in Italy, is that correct?
That was in Italy. He shot her to death, yes. She was 18. He was in his 20s, but he shot her to death, and he was proud of it. He was definitely feeling it was the right thing to do.
And Florence, I got to tell you, you know, me growing up in the United States and hearing a story like that, it's just hard for me to understand. But at the same time, is that equivalent to what we hear about the honor killings for Muslim immigrants that come to the United States and other places, and we can't believe they would actually kill family members for dishonoring the family? But, I mean, is this the same mindset that your dad had, do you think?
I believe so. I think it's a Mediterranean thing. I went to an international Christian booksellers convention in 2010, and I met people from all over the world. I met people from six continents. And if I told Americans this story that my father shot his sister to death, they say, oh, isn't that terrible? Isn't that horrible? People from Northern Africa or some of these island nations like Jamaica, different parts of the world like the Far East, said, oh, yes, yes, we have the same thing in our country. Our fathers would do the same thing if we got pregnant out of wedlock. Our fathers would kill us. You know, they thought nothing of it.
And that was Florence Blake. We have some more for an interview. We'll try to get some excerpts here in the next few weeks when we can. But a fascinating story of her father and the rough life that she had living with murderers, her own family. And I just wanted you to hear that story. And what I do want you to know is we will be continuing our look into this election next week. It's week after week. Unbelievable. We can't get all the stories in. And that's why you need to listen to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.